On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doug Kirby.
We're delighted to welcome to On the Bookshelf a man who brings some information that will surprise you, may shock you a little bit because it did me, but also offers hope. We are delighted to welcome to On the Bookshelf John Cavanna, who along with his wife Robin Broad has written the book The Water Defenders, How Ordinary People Saved a Country from Corporate Greed. It's from Beacon Press, and it's an incredible true story of what happened in El Salvador and how they were able to help successfully defend the rights of the people of the country to have their water stay clean. She is an expert in international development who won a prestigious Guggenheim Fellowship for her work on the project, as well as two previous MacArthur Fellowships. A professor at American University, she served as an international economist in the U.S. Treasury Department, in the U.S. Congress, and at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. John Cavanna is the director of the Washington, D.C.-based Institute for Policy Studies, an organization that collaborates with the Poor People's Campaign and other dynamic social movements to turn ideas into action for peace, justice, and the environment. They together helped build the network of international allies that spearheaded the global fight against mining in El Salvador and have co-authored several previous books together, including this new one, which is from Beacon Press. And John is here with us. John, thank you so much for taking time to visit with us.
It's a great pleasure to be with you here today, Doc.
First of all, let's talk about mining. I got to say, the first thing that comes to my mind is one of two things. People down deep in the earth with pickaxes, chopping away at rocks, and flashy silver and gold ones fall, and they go, hey, this must be silver and gold. Or we think of the 49ers, right, panning for gold in California or later on in the Yukon in Alaska. Never thought about using cyanide to leach away the other rocks and leave only the gold, but apparently that is one of the predominant ways of getting gold out of the ground these days.
You know, it's interesting because you're right, Doc. Those are the predominant sort of things in our culture, images in our culture about gold are those, panning gold in the California rivers or the Yukon. The pickaxes also, here's the interesting thing. Pretty quickly after 1849 and the California gold rush, scientists figured out that you could get a lot more gold out of the rock if you used either cyanide or mercury. That's the other chemical that's used. Cyanide, though, is used in most mines, and what it does is it dissolves the rock around the gold and then separates the gold out. It's very efficient. The problem is cyanide is toxic.
Right.
And if it gets into your rivers, it gets into your land, it poisons it. And in some areas, well, take El Salvador, there's one big river system that goes through the whole country providing water for over half the people. You poison that and you've actually killed half the population because we all need water. We can't live without it for more than 3 to 4 days.
Right. And not only that, but that same river runs through Honduras.
And Guatemala.
It starts in Guatemala.
Yeah. So it's picking up bad stuff all along the way.
Yes.
It's really important to challenge people's traditional notions. Also, mining is, this won't surprise you, Doc, it's one of the three most dangerous professions in the world because you're digging way down there.
Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of horrible accidents that have come out of mining and also some daring rescues. So it is both, it's rare in being both very bad for people who work in the mines, also very bad for the environment, yet pretty vital.
Yeah.
Most metals are pretty vital. Gold, a little less so. Only about 10% of the gold we take out of the ground is used in your cell phone and other industrial uses. About half of it is used in jewelry. So I think actually as more and more people learn how dangerous it is and how bad for the environment gold mining is, we could shift a lot of that consumption away to other things. People can declare their love through other metals other than other than gold.
So here's the thing that surprised me, and embarrassed that I never knew it was any other different, but this is the great thing about reading books, right? You pour cyanide on the rock, it dissolves the rock, leaves the gold. Isn't there something you could pour on the cyanide that would break it down chemically, some kind of filtration system or something? But that's not what ever happens, apparently.
It's not what happens, and here's the problem with gold mining, silver mining, and the mining of a lot of minerals. It takes tons and tons of rock to get an ounce of gold.
Right.
I mean, when you get that ounce, it's great because it's selling at $1,800 an ounce.
Sweet.
But it takes a huge amount of rock. So you're running a huge amount, you're pulverizing the rock, you're running it through this facility, you're covering it with cyanide. Once it's covered, no, it's in the rock. And so this is the terrible thing, and people, any of your listeners who've lived around mines know this. You have a giant gold mine a little bit north of you in the western part of South Carolina. Actually, the biggest gold mine to the east of the Mississippi is there. And once all of this rock is pulverized and the gold is taken out, the only way to safely store it is you put it in a giant, it's called a tailings pond, but you dump all of the rock in a lined pond, and you keep it underwater. Mm-hmm. You don't expose it to the air forever. That's why gold, I mean, there are horrible problems when those tailings ponds leak,
right?
And which they inevitably do.
Sure.
And that's where you have poisoning. And there has been a bunch of cyanide poisoning around this South Carolina mine. So there's no way around it. It's incredibly efficient. Nobody's out. So the 49ers, they got all the gold that was just lying around.
Right.
That was all taken out by 1850. And most of the rest of the gold is in rock that's pretty far down. And it's tiny little flecks of gold. So when you see the rock, it sometimes shines a bit. But that's the only way to get it out. And it is worth so much now that gold mining companies are going not just El Salvador, they're going all over Latin America, Africa, Asia, and the United States, and endangering both workers and communities around them. This is a big issue, and it's not just gold. This is a big issue for communities and around copper and other metals that we really do need.
Mm-hmm.
And the key issue I just want to say here is water. You also use a lot of water. You pump water through this process to separate the gold, so you're using a lot of it. You got to dispose of that water. It's just a lot more dangerous than, and I'm kind of surprised there hasn't been a great Hollywood movie that shows what gold mining is really like.
That's a
because
choice.
once people see a gold mine and you see the fish all around the area dead and you see people with skin diseases and rashes and so on, You think very differently about it. And so
getting the word out certainly should make a difference. But now what you guys learned in El Salvador is that just because people, especially if there are people who are in the communities that are going to be affected by it, if they start saying, hey, we think this is a bad idea, there's so much money to be made that there's also plenty of money to spread around so that you could bribe people to say, oh, no, it'll be fine, or, hey, here's $10,000. Why don't you just move to another country? It'll be great. You'll love it. Or, in some cases, let's just help them to stop breathing. And so they go on. The particular organization was a Pacific Rim, that was a Canadian-based mining company.
Right.
And they came in, and they did a great PR job coming in and talking, using those magic words, you know, jobs, it'll be good for you, you know, there'll be more money, everything will be better, and hey, it's not a big deal. Gosh, Aruni, look at how well we've done with all these. And they come in with all their PR and talk about what a great job they do and how environmentally secure they are and all that, which is not necessarily true, right?
Yes, and you're right. They do a fantastic job of selling this. But listen to this business model, Doc. This is what was mind-blowing to me as we got into it. If you're a mining company, you go in, you explore, you have to find the gold. Once you find it, you have to get an actual permit to mine the gold. And then once you start mining it, you're only giving 2% of the profits to the country you're mining in. And very smartly, the mining companies figured out, give 1% to the local government and 1% to the national government, and actually in a big gold mine that ends up being a lot of money. But what you've done with that, but you keep 98%, by the way.
Right.
So the mining companies are doing great, yeah, making gobs of money for their investors. But the trick here, and this was what was so insidious as we went into these communities, and as we get into South Carolina and other places where this mining company is operating, it's pretty much the same story. For local governments, that's a huge amount of money.
Sure.
So you want the mine there. Local people, of course, initially, this is the case in El Salvador, they thought, oh, great, a lot of jobs, prosperity. They're also throwing money around to sort of soften the ground. This is what Walmart does when it goes into a community. It gives this much to the local church,
right,
and this much to the local school.
Mm-hmm.
So they did all that. Luckily, these most of them were farmers in El Salvador. They said, okay, this sounds good. We have a lot of friends just across the river in Honduras where there is a lot of mining. Let's go over and visit one. So that's when they went to visit. That's when they learned, one, how much money was used in the process of, how much water was used in the process of mining. And also they saw the consequences of the leakage of cyanide into the rivers in terms of dead fish and skin diseases and so on. So that's when they started to fight back, and they come home, and this is what's so tragic. Then there's huge conflict in the community because the mining companies have in effect bought off the local officials. They've got their own security, and meanwhile, ordinary people in the community are more and more opposed. And in this book, The Water Defenders, we tell the story of what happened. Four of the people opposing the mining were killed under very suspicious circumstances. And here's the insidious thing. None of us think that the mining company actually ordered the killing of these leaders. It's simply that when there's so much money going to local officials, it's in their interest to get rid of very good organizers, people who are fighting the mine. So imagine the fortitude of these communities that four of their people are killed, and yet they continue to educate, they continue to organize, they do tons of community forums, they do all sorts of things. They use community radio beautifully to do skits about the importance of water and how mining will poison it. And they built pretty quickly a very broad-based opposition to mining in that country. One other thing about El Salvador, it's a dry country. Most of the trees have been cut down, and so water is even more precious there than it is in most of the United States. So it was amazing to watch this. We were able to go back and forth. We got to know them because my organization in Washington, the Institute for Policy Studies, gave an award to this organization. Then one of the people who was supposed to come and get the award is killed. And then they asked us for help because not only were they facing a mining company that they were afraid would poison their rivers, as the Salvadoran government got a bit nervous and started to slow down the permitting of new mines, the mining companies actually sued the government of El Salvador, and that ends up in a tribunal in Washington, D.C. at the World Bank. And that's in particular when the Salvadorans asked a bunch of us in the United States and in Canada if we could help them. So this is a very interesting story that involves not just people on the ground in a poor place in a poor country, but the very interesting bonds of support and, you know, mutual respect that can be built between people who have common goals and who are, I mean, deep down simply trying to save their rivers and their environment for themselves and their children.
We're talking, if you're late joining us, to John Cavanagh, who, along with his wife, Robin Broad, wrote The Water Defenders, How Ordinary People Saved a Country from Corporate Greed. It's from Beacon Press. Now, interestingly enough, your wife has connections to the World Bank. That
right.
is to say, she wrote her PhD dissertation and her first book about them, worked as a program officer at the Treasury Department, and yet had barely heard of the World Bank Group's International Center for Settlement of Investment Disputes before this lawsuit, which reminds us that there are going to be little committees all over the place making decisions that will affect a lot of people, And most of us have never heard of these committees or these organizations. And this is one that I had never heard of either. And I do read a fair amount. They had a three-person tribunal that heard the case that PacRim, at that point, I think it was PacRim's new yeah. owners, right, who said, oh, yeah, you know, we've had a deal, and they reneged in this deal, and you should, we're suing them, we need this money to recoup our losses. And these three guys, or these three people, had all the responsibility and authority to say, you're right, they owe you money, and you should go ahead and drill those doggone wells. Or to say, no, leave and be gone and never come, darken the doors of these places again. That's an awful lot of authority put in people that are not elected and have, this is international influences that's going on here. That was a little not surprising, but still not pleasant to learn.
You know, so it's fascinating, the rules that have been set up to help corporations do what they do.
Yes.
A lot of this goes back. I remember in the 1950s, there was this famous phrase when the head of General Motors testified before the U.S. Congress. He said, look, give us these breaks because what's good for General Motors is good for the United States.
Right.
And vice versa. And that was sort of the philosophy of the U.S. in the 50s and 60s. Big companies were big, but they employed a lot of people, and they gave back to the communities. What began to happen in the 1970s and 1980s is some of these companies, including the mining companies, got too big, and they went global. And at that point, they lost any connection to their local communities. And I think this is a huge problem we're still dealing with today. And it was in the 1980s that these companies pushed the U.S. government. This was under when Ronald Reagan was president. You had Margaret Thatcher in England. Very much the philosophy was, let big business do what it wants, and it'll be good for all of us. And it was at that point that a lot of these rules were written that gave a free ride to corporations. In this case, the rule that was written was one that said, if you're having a problem, let's say you're a big company, you're in El Salvador, you're having a problem with the government, you don't have to go through the local courts. You can skip them, and you can jump into this secret tribunal in the World Bank. It's a horrible idea.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, as more people learn about it, partly through our book, but through other things as well, it's one of these things when exposed to light, it's sort of like a vampire here. It's people are appalled. And I think we have a chance of changing these rules, but right now they exist. The Salvadorans said to us when they learned about it, how can this be?
Hmm.
Because in the tribunal, corporations can sue governments, but governments and communities can't sue corporations. It's totally one way.
Yeah.
And so they asked for our help. And this is where this fight in El Salvador to save rivers turns into a global fight, because we in Washington, we were able to get all sorts of people who care, faith groups and environmental groups and labor unions to come in and support the people in El Salvador and put pressure on this tribunal. We made a huge amount of noise. We said this is completely unjust. Of course people should have the right to save their rivers. And here's the good news, Doc. Finally, in the end, after 7 years of a long, secretive trial, the court actually, the tribunal ruled against the company. Hooray.
Yes.
And then this is the fascinating part of the story. So the goal of the people on the ground in El Salvador was two things. It was defeat this lawsuit. Yay. They've won that. And then they wanted to kick out the mining company, which is what a lot of people do in these local fights around the world.
Mm-hmm.
But they wanted to go one step further. They wanted to ban all, not just gold mining, but metals mining in the whole country. To which we said, are you kidding? How are you going to do that? That's big. And here's where it was a fascinating just twist in the plot of this story that we tell. The company got arrogant, and the company said, wait a second, we lost this tribunal. They're asking us to pay $8 million. One, we're not paying. And two, they said to El Salvador, you people are ignorant. You don't know that this would be good for you. You think you're ignorant. And so basically, the heck with you. I mean, either wake up and change your law laws and let us in, or you know, we don't care about you. And so that ticked a lot of people off. That gave fuel to the movement to ban mining. And finally, then miraculously, 6 months later, they're able to get a vote in the Congress of El Salvador. And even very conservative parties, this would be like the Republican Party and the Democratic Party coming together to stop some horrible environmental crisis in the United States. So that's how remarkable this is, and it is a testimony to the bravery and to the tenacity and also to the smarts of these people of reaching across the aisle, as we would call it in this country.
And this is a country that, for folks that forgot, that was torn apart by civil war for years. There were death squads roaming the country and all of that. And here we have them 20, 25 years later, and they're saying, okay, we still don't like you guys all that much, but this is bigger than us not liking each other.
Right.
And I think that's remarkable. And this has had a domino effect on other countries that have been moving in the same direction, right? Argentina, Colombia, Costa Rica, Panama, Chile, Peru. They're all saying, wait, you know, if El Salvador can do that, hey, maybe we can too.
Yeah, it's a really interesting shift. And, you know, this is part of, I think, a global thing. It's also true in Alabama. Everybody needs water. Everybody needs safe pipes to get them water. They need pipes to get sanitation out and so on. It's a problem everywhere in the world. So I think the appeal of this story, we call these people, they call themselves water defenders.
Yeah.
In the U.S., in certain areas, people are calling themselves water protectors. This is a huge issue, by the way. The U.S. Congress is right now debating a giant bill to build new infrastructure in this country, and at the center of it is people's realization that our pipes are falling apart, and we still have over 10 million people still get their water through lead pipes, which we know from Flint, Michigan, is deadly.
Yeah.
So by putting it, their main slogan was water is life, or we can live without gold, but we can't live without water. When you pitch it that way, it turns out nobody's against water. It's very hard to fight that.
Yeah.
And they were able to get unlikely allies. One of our favorite pieces of the book is in that country, the Catholic Church is extremely important and influential. There was a very conservative, pro-big business archbishop, and they tried to meet him, and he blew them off. Finally, they get a meeting. He's not paying any attention. He's reading something else. And then one of them mentions this fact that we started this conversation with, that you use cyanide to separate the rock from the gold from the rock. And all of a sudden, he perked up and said, oh, my God, why didn't you say that at the beginning? I have a master's in chemistry. I know you can't use cyanide would be a huge threat to our rivers. And he turned around and he turned the Catholic Church into a big ally of the water defenders. And that was a game changer.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, when you start tossing words like cyanide around, then it catches people's ears. It certainly caught my eye when I'm reading along and they were talking about the water being a nice cranberry color without cranberries, or orange, but not from orange juice, you know.
Right.
Pretty horrifying. And I've had the privilege of doing short-term musical mission trips around the world, and I've been in some places of dire poverty. Cuba is one of them, South Africa. Right. And there are people all over the world that have issues with water. They can't drink their own water in Havana because the pipes are so old, and they get the water directly from the harbor, which at one point when I visited had cholera. And so they said, oh, be sure while you're here not to drink any water from the tap. Like, we had pretty much learned that would be a stupid idea anyway. But they said, and I said, is it worse than usual? Oh, yeah, the cholera. That's the problem this week. So that's horrible enough. But the idea of having companies that come in and act like they're doing you a favor, and they're the ones that are going to poison you, pretty terrible. Are there any of these mining companies that are finding ways that aren't as destructive, or is it just going to be like this? Just like digging coal out of the ground is really tough on the coal miners. Is there any way of getting precious metals out of the ground that doesn't involve this massive environmental disaster?
You know, the problem here is back to the business model. These companies are set up to maximize returns to their shareholders.
Sure.
So, yes, there would be ways of doing it, but not ways that minimize costs. All the ways that you could do it would cost a massive amount of money, and that's not what mining companies are set up to do.
Well, yeah.
So that's the problem right there. Now, there is a solution, which is that right now in the U.S., we recycle about 30% of the metals we use. If we could get that up to 80 to 90%, we could eliminate half of the mines in the world and save a huge amount of water. And we can do that. That's the sort of thing. We are an ingenious people.
Yes.
We know how to do it. And if the government would help by creating more incentives to recycle, we could do it way faster. So that's the path forward that will save lives, save the water, save the environment.
This is something that I think is critical enough, and certainly how could it be a partisan fight about something like this? So please, if you are actually a person that listens to this show and you have any influence in seats of government, think about that. Would you like to turn your tap and see orange or red water coming out of the tap and think that this is what my family's got to put up with? And all we have to do is just do a better job in recycling metals, which is smart anyway for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is why would you throw stuff away in the ground that somebody can reuse?
Right.
That seems like such an easy and reasonable thing.
It is an easy and reasonable thing, and just as now people recycle most of their plastic and paper outside their homes, hopefully in 5 years, 10 years, we'll be doing the same with most our computers, our cell phones, our refrigerators. Think of all the things that you put outside when they break to go to the dump. And in the process, we could create millions of very good jobs.
And think about all of the batteries that people just toss in the trash and then end up in landfills, and they've got lithium in them and so forth. You know, that's easy to recycle.
Exactly. Yes, no, and that's the big you've just said for the next 10 years, we are going to have a big shift in our economy. We're going to move from fossil fuels to clean energy. We're going to move massively towards electric cars. So the one big mineral that is used in that shift is lithium. You just named it. And it is only, you can only mine that in dangerous ways as well. So we're going to have to be extremely careful about recycling lithium as we are with gold, and it's just a whole consciousness shift we need in the country. We need it to start it with school kids. That's how we started recycling. We need a huge amount of education, and we need the government can help by subsidizing the businesses that would be at the center of the
tax
recycling.
Tax credits and so forth.
Yeah, easy to do. It just takes will. And I look to the climate movement today and young people with climate. I think they'll turn to this in the next 2 to 3 to 4 years, and you will see a huge youth-led movement to force old fogies to recycle everything, and that will help save the water of the world.
I think that's a wonderful thing. So, John, websites, anything like that, people can get in touch with you guys.
Sure. The book is The Water Defenders. You can get to me by going to the website of the Institute for Policy Studies, and my email address is right there.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. John, thank you so much for taking the time to do such. Thank you, first of all, for the incredible work that you and Robin did in helping the people of El Salvador and these organizations that suffered and were threatened and in some cases were murdered. I know we could talk a while about that, and we didn't get to cover very much, but I felt like what we could do best is to let people know that things can change if we step up and start doing them and insist on simple things like a recycling is a big step in the right way. And thank you so much for coming to talk about your book, The Water Defender.
Thanks so much for having me, Doc.
John Cavanna, the author, along with his wife, Robin Broad, of The Water Defenders, How Ordinary People Saved a Country from Corporate Greed. It's from Beacon Press. How can we keep our water cleaner? Well, obviously, avoiding having gold and silver mines nearby would go a long way. And how do we avoid needing more gold and silver mines to get and lithium mines to get the things that we need for our batteries and our cell phones and our computers and all? Recycle the old metals instead of just hanging on to them, or worse yet, throwing them away. Recycling can do so much good. So thanks for joining us. Thanks for listening to the podcast on thebookshelf.podbean.com. And we'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Dot Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.